Welcome to the jungle. My name is Jim Rohn. We are live in Southern California in the Quicken Loan Studios. Once again, apply simply, understand fully, and mortgage confidently. Welcome to the program. Nice to have you here. All right, good show for you. Here's how it sets up. Telephone number, as you know, is toll-free. It's good in the U.S. It's good in Canada. No matter where you can hear us, I would love to hear from you on this Veterans Day. Actually, yesterday was Veterans Day, but it is being observed today as well, and I will get to that momentarily. If you know what you want to talk about, you should call me right now. 1-800-636-8686. Use the phone number. Get going. You can follow me on Twitter at Jim Rohn. And you can also email me directly at Rome, R-O-M-E, at haveatake.com. Coming off another busy weekend of NFL action, Jason Lockenfour is going to be my guest next segment. In hour number two, we're talking Red Sox baseball. Joe Kelly back on the program. Middle of hour number two. Middle of hour number three, Mark Stein, an NBA reporter with the New York Times. He had the story and the report that Carmelo Anthony's time in Houston might be numbered. His days might be numbered. So I've got that in hour number three and a ton of show. Lots of great content, lots to talk about regarding the NFL, college football, the NBA, and more. Hit me up right now, 1-800-636-8686. The RPO after the show, Rome Price Opinion. Trevor Price is ready to go. All right, starting first with Veterans Day. Yesterday was Veterans Day. It was observed around the country yesterday and today. And with that in mind, I do want to take a moment. I want to take one moment, and I want to thank those who have served, those who are currently serving, and those who have made the ultimate sacrifice. I say this every year at this time. It remains true. I will say it again next year at this time. There is nothing that we can do to repay you, honor you as much as you deserve. So thank you to all of you. And I want to make that very clear, abundantly clear on this Monday and on Veterans Day as well. All right, turning to the NFL, another busy NFL weekend means there's lots of different places where I might start. And I'm always charged with trying to figure out exactly where to go, where to start. What do I do today? Is it with the Rams, dealing with everything off the field, handling business on the field, and dropping an amazing new audible?
He has jumped up to...
Halle Berry. I could start right there. Or I could start with Aaron Donald looking to rumble after that game. Or maybe I start with the Super Bowl champion Philadelphia Eagles appearing to fall apart right before our eyes. They got punked last night by the Cowboys. Maybe I start with Khalil Mack bouncing back after missing a couple of weeks to record a couple of sacks. Don't look now, but the Bears are on top of that division. Or maybe I start with the Saints, smashing the Bengals. I could start in any of those places. All would be good. But to me, the no-brainer is you start in Nashville, where Tennessee hammered the Patriots 34-10. A 24-point blowout, and I'm still not sure that it was even that close. Tennessee attacked New England. They went right after Stephon Gilmore, like they were looking to prove a point. Oh, that's your best corner. Yeah, well, we're going to humiliate that guy. And they did. And that was not the only humiliating moment for the Patriots. There was the fact that the Titans' defense kept the Patriots' offense under wraps for most of the game. They consistently confused the Pats. And that Bill Belichick had no choice but to wave the white flag by pulling Tom Brady from the game when there was no chance of winning. Did you ever think you'd see that? Or how about when they broke out this play on 3rd and 7?
Left foot forward for Brady. Waits on the snap and he takes it. A give to White. He starts to his left, flips it to Edelman, who throws it right for Brady. Makes the catch, stumbles at the 40, and he dives close to the first down marker with Woodyard covering up for Tennessee. And Tom Brady makes the catch on the reverse and then the wide receiver pass, but he stumbled toward the first down marker, unable to get there.
Hey, at least he caught it this time.
Yeah, I guess. He's got that going for him, which is nice. The good news is Tom Brady became the oldest player since Jerry Rice to catch an NFL pass. The bad news is he looked like the oldest man on earth when he caught that pass and started to run. He had nothing but green space in front of him, and then he face planted. The Patriots just keep running that same play, and they keep getting the same results, don't they? I mean, don't get me wrong. It's a good play. He generally is wide open. He just can't catch it or run with it when he does catch it. But they keep calling it. I mean, the Patriots really, really want to get the ball to Tom Brady in space. And for the life of me, I have no idea why. Just like I will never understand why a guy who is so careful and so methodical and so good with his footwork in the pocket looks like a baby giraffe wearing clown shoes outside of the pocket. The most accomplished quarterback in NFL history can barely put one foot in front of the other without falling over. And if falling on his face was not embarrassing enough, the Titans then came through with some real salt for his wounds.
Titans take over on downs from their 42. A handoff to Lewis. It's a reverse pass as he gave it up to Jennings, who threw it left-handed to Mariota. And he runs it across the 30, the 40-yard line of the Patriots, tackled at the 38.
Wow.
As the Titans gave the Pats a taste of their own doing.
Grable rubbing it in.
The same play the Patriots ran with Tom Brady on the previous series.
It's a great call.
Yeah, it's a great call, and it worked. They busted out a pass to the quarterback of their own, and it worked. They busted it out, except they ran it so much better because their quarterback can run so much better. I mean, that was not a horror show when he caught that ball. That instead was a first down, and that was an edge to the Titans. They had an edge. Maybe because so many of those Titans are former Patriots, and all those former Patriots showed up. Malcolm Butler, there was so much about him going into that game, about how he got left out of the Super Bowl, about how he was not having a good year. Well, he showed up yesterday, right? No catches allowed. Another former Pat, Logan Ryan, 7-yard sack in the first half, a huge pass breakup on fourth down in the second half, Josh Klein doing work on the offensive line, and then Deion Lewis. Deion Lewis had 68 yards. I've said it before, I'll say it again. There is nothing more tired than that so-called revenge game. But yesterday was a revenge game. Not that Titans head coach and former Patriot Mike Vrabel was going to admit it. He didn't need to, though, because Deion Lewis did. He played it cool throughout the entire week, but then he dropped an absolute anvil on the Pats after the game.
I didn't have to prove anything. I know I could play. Just let our team know that these guys are beatable. You just got to take it to them and be physical, and we'll wear them out. I played there, so I know those guys, and I know that if you be physical with them and let them have it, they'll fold.
Damn. Saying that he knows the Pats and that if you're physical with them, they'll fold is something else now. That's something else. I mean, he has called them soft, straight up. He called them soft. He didn't use that word, but he called them soft. That's the type of thing that you never hear with regards to the Patriot way. But then again, I know why Lewis feels that way. He had a big year for them last year. He had more than 1,100 yards for the Patriots and yet was still allowed to walk in free agency. He had another thought when he was asked if that game was personal to him.
Hell yeah, it's personal. That's what happens when you go cheap. You get your ass kicked.
Uh-oh! Quote, hell yeah, it's personal. When you go cheap, you get your ass kicked. There it is, your quote of 2018. When you go cheap, you get your ass kicked. And the Patriots did get their ass kicked, brutally. But the quote itself is probably worse than that beating that they took on the field and on the scoreboard, 34-10. That's incredible. Again, something you would never, ever hear with regards to the Patriot way. I mean, the Patriot way is about this. It's about getting rid of guys a little bit too early as opposed to a little bit too late. This time, though, those guys they got rid of, and not just players, but coaches, those guys came back and punched them in the face repeatedly, and then they talked junk about it. Listen to me now and remember it. Hey, you know that phrase, generally, that you get what you pay for? You always get what you pay for. Yeah, well, Deion Lewis has kind of reframed that and has turned it around. Instead of saying you generally get what you pay for, you say when you go cheap, you get your ass kicked. That's better than you get what you pay for. When you go cheap, you get your ass kicked. And let me tell you something. That trick play may have worked. There was nothing gimmicky about that beatdown. There was nothing lucky about that beatdown. They straight up kicked their ass. And they beat them in every single phase. They were beaten down, outclassed, outplayed, outcoached. They got worked. And that's a bad loss, not just because of the guys who laid it on them, but that may cost them the top seed overall in the AFC because all of a sudden now you're two games back in Kansas City with only six games to play. You may have the tiebreaker, but it's not going to matter. Not two games back with six games to play. There was nothing gimmicky about that beatdown. They got hammered. 1-800-636-8686. How good do you think that must have felt? I know it did to Lewis. He just said a point blank. You go cheap, you get your ass kicked. I know it did to Malcolm Butler, who had a great game. You know it did to Mike Vrabel, who ultimately had 8 great years with the Patriots, only to get traded to Kansas City and admitted that that led to some strained relations between he and the Hood. Man, that had to feel good. That had to feel good. 1-800-636-8686. Dear Rome, I think Tom Brady looks graceful when running after a reception. Signed, Albert Pujols legging out another ground out. John in Huntington Beach. Hey, John, I don't remember you getting your email read first on any day on this show. Let's hope that never happens again. That's not the guy that I want setting the tone. Hey, Jim, the Eagles look great since shocking the world in winning a title. Regards, Buster Douglas. As great as that was, what Philadelphia did last year, that was still not the same as beating Mike Tyson as a 40-1 underdog in the middle of the night. That to me, was one of the greatest upsets ever. When I look back on my entire career of talking sports, that story right there is one of the most shocking things I've ever seen. Way more shocking than Philadelphia losing their starting quarterback and winning the Super Bowl last year. Even as long as it had been since Philly won a world championship, that even to me does not compare to the shock in Buster Douglas when nobody gave him any chance whatsoever knocking out Mike Tyson. Nice try, Wass. Rome. I told you Matt Barkley would be one hell of a quarterback in the NFL. Regards, 2012. The Jets can make anybody look like a good quarterback. The Jets made Matt Barkley look like Jim Kelly yesterday. John in WI. War. What do you mean? What do you mean? You know, I said it over the weekend with regards to Jason Garrett. I'm not looking to get anybody fired. I'm not looking to take food off anybody's table. It's not my deal. It's not my style. I'm not about that life. I don't want somebody doing it to me, and I would never misuse the forum that I have or the microphone that I have. I'm not looking to do that. The only thing keeping Todd Bowles, I think, employed this morning is that the Jets have nobody else to go to within, because there's no way you have the Buffalo Bills, one of the worst offenses ever, literally, one of the worst offenses ever, come into your house and hang 41 on you and think that you're going to keep your job. And I think the reason he is they've got nobody else to give it to in-house. Fake Kellen Winslow tweets, did you compare Tom Brady to a giraffe? Does this mean that we can induct TB12 into the giraffe family? Still no giraffe family. There's no rat family. There's no giraffe family, at least not on my watch. What I said is, why is it that this guy, the GOAT, the second anytime the GOAT takes one step out of the pocket, he looks like a baby giraffe. And why are they obsessed with getting that baby giraffe in clown shoes in open space? Am I wrong? Is that unfair? Dude looks like a baby giraffe. There is nothing but glorious green turf between him and the first down marker and beyond. And my man went face first into the ground like a baby giraffe. All right, we're coming right back. And when we do, Jason Lockenfora joins us. Joe Kelly coming up next hour. And I've got a lot more to get to. You know, I know there's several of you out there who have had a bad night. And I know why it is. Because you probably did not sleep well. And I bet I can guess why you didn't sleep well. Because you snore. Or the person next to you snores. Either way, I've got the solution. It's a revolutionary solution. It's the Zepa. Zepa is a game changer. If you snore, you're not sleeping. If you're not sleeping, you're not succeeding. If you want success, you've got to be at your very best. You have to be rested. Zepa is the solution that helps you get that great night of sleep that you feel that you need. So you feel great when you wake up. Everybody who sleeps next to you also gets the rest they need. Even if you're sleeping, if you use a Zepa. Zepa is the only snoring solution of its kind. If you snore, you need to get one. Go to ZYPPAH.com. Zepa. It's happy Z spelled backwards. Go to Zepa.com. Get a Zepa. Tell everybody you know to get one. Remember, ZYPPAH, Zepa.com. Get the great night of sleep that you need and that you deserve.
You're listening to the Jim Rome Show.
All right, time to get to coming off the NFL weekend. I want to talk about Philadelphia. The defending champs do not look like it, do they? Cowboys didn't save their season. Let's be very clear about this. They did not save their season. They kept their season alive. So I want to hit last night's matchup. Cleveland Browns look great. Baker Mayfield said, I woke up and I felt dangerous. It's a great quote. Would have been the quote of the day otherwise. At PGA and the Mile High tweets, there is no better way to start the week than honoring real Patriots, followed by breaking down the beatdown of the NFL's Patriots. There is something to be said about that. I mean, you want to talk about a real Patriot. A real Patriot, to quote a real Patriot, Pat Tillman. He used to be fond of saying that was a nice, swift ass-kicking. And that's what Tennessee laid on New England. Joining me right now to talk about that and some other action from around the weekend is an NFL insider for CBS Sports and CBSSports.com. He is the co-host of the Be More Opinionated podcast. My man is playing right through. JLC, how are you? Great to have you.
I'm doing well, buddy. How are you?
Jason, I'm great. Sorry about the technical difficulties, but you are
a boss
and a legend for working through it. Listen, a ton to unpack from yesterday. I saw you in the morning. I came back here, and then a lot happened between now and then. Why don't we start with the Titans and the Patriots? What did Tennessee show you offensively and defensively in laying that beat down on the Pats?
Well, I mean, look, I've been a bit of a Marcus Mariota skeptic. He obviously has played through and with and around a lot of injuries in his brief career, and now that hand seems to be all the way back and he's unencumbered, you see a lot more touch on his passes. He's throwing these kind of rainbow moon balls. He's putting right in the breadbasket of his receivers a lot of times to the outside, so they're not, you know, they're cutting down on the chance of turnovers. That ball's either going to be caught by his guy or it should go harmlessly out of bounds. I'm not all rah-rah Titans now. They could lose to the Colts next week, and all of a sudden the Colts will be the sort of wild card team du jour who everybody's looking at to make a move. They've quietly won three in a row. You know, I think this is sort of who Tennessee is. I think they could, if everything comes into place and they play their tails off, you know, in a fairly watered-down AFC, I think they could play with anybody. They could also get beat 21-0 by Baltimore at home and look like, you know what I mean? It's look like it was one-way traffic the other way. So I just think you look at Baltimore, Cincinnati, Miami, Tennessee, Indianapolis. One of those teams is probably the second wild card. I just don't know what that gets you in January. Maybe a beatdown.
Jason Locken for my guest. All right, so what about the Pats? Is this sort of who the Pats are? For instance, they've looked like the Patriots for most of the season, but there have been a few times where they've thrown some real clunkers. So is this just a one-off that'll happen every now and then, especially if you don't have Gronk, or is it something to be legitimately worried about?
No, I think it's more of a one-off. They're going to win that division. They're going to win that division going away. You know, we'll see if the Chiefs, you know, if the Chiefs are able to stay on this magical run. Does Andy Reid rest some guys down the stretch? You know, do they lose a game or two and all of a sudden, you know, the Patriots are you know, still have a chance to get home field? I'm not going to freak out about them just yet. They kind of stumbled into this bye a little bit. It was a deep bye in the season for them with all the injuries and guys in and out of the lineup and everything else. I think it comes at a good time for them to adjust. And we'll see if they can get, you know, Edelman and Gronk and Gordon and Sony all on the field for any extended period of time. You know, I think that's a very formidable offense. Defense, we know what they do, right? They let you move between the 20s and they try to clamp you down in the red zone. And that's generally been good enough. But if the offense slips a little bit, you know, then it may not be good enough. But they're going to be playing in January. We know that much.
Jason Lockenfor joins us. All right, so let me get your thoughts on a few coaching situations, starting with the Browns. They look good yesterday. They look really good.
Yeah.
In fact, did they look good enough, Jason, that there's any chance at all that Greg Williams could actually be a legitimate candidate to keep that job?
Oh, they're going to interview him. I mean, I have a hard time seeing the process play out without him meriting an interview. And then the question will be, who else is in the mix? Baker Mayfield makes this an incredibly intriguing proposition, but the Haslams have had very difficult times attracting top candidates, getting people to take those jobs, and their decision-making process has largely been flawed. I mean, they had everybody in their building and all their analytics people and all the people they pay to make these decisions, say, draft Bridgewater. He took Manziel. They had all the same processes and people saying, everything we're doing here points to Sean McDermott. They said, that's great. thanks for your help. We're going to go hire Hugh Jackson and keep him around a year and a half longer than we should have. So I don't know, Jim. I don't know. I'm a little bit skeptical of the idea that they're going to have, you know, Lincoln Riley and all the top hot coaching candidates dying to come and ply their, you know, trades in the NFL for the first time under the Haslams. We'll see. But Greg Williams is a way of connecting with owners. You know, he spent a lot of time coaching in Tennessee back in the day. Jimmy Haslam's a Tennessee guy. His brother's the governor of Tennessee. You know, we'll see. I think that team will continue to play all out, week in, week out for Greg Williams. And I think they'll win a few more games, and I think he'll merit consideration.
And he's already won as many games as Hugh Jackson did in 2 years as being a head coach there. What about the Ravens? You had this report. Now, they started the year 4-2, but they have lost three straight. What's that mean to John Harbaugh's future?
Yeah, I mean, he's got 1 year left on his deal. He took a one-year sort of kick-the-can-down-the-road extension a year ago. I'm told that will not be happening again. The Ravens are empowering a new young general manager, Eric DaCosta. The Ravens roster looks like it's primed for a rebuild, starting with Joe Flacco making way for Lamar Jackson. And, you know, would that coupling of that GM and that coach work long-term? You know, it depends who you talk to. But the bottom line is, unless they recommit to John Harbaugh with a top-of-the-market contract offer, and if anything, owner Steve Bisciotti has been ruminating the last 2 years when the season ended at his press conference about how close he came to making a coaching change, it's difficult to see a scenario where this team does enough that all these components are back next year. And Harbaugh will be, if he's available, the most hotly coveted coach on the market, I believe, especially if he can align himself with a quality offensive coordinator, because that's been a bit of a bugaboo for him. And you know, again, when an owner talks 2 straight years about how close he came to making this decision, and you're here at the pivotal bye week, and nobody's trying to extend him, and he's not going to do another Band-Aid contract, then, you know, it doesn't take Houdini to figure out where that thing's going.
No, it does not. Jason, looking forward to joining us. Jason, what about the Packers? They beat the Dolphins. They're 4-4-1, but what is your sense as to the vibe around that team, and in particular, whether or not Mike McCarthy is back next season?
It's such a similar situation to Baltimore. Their young GM took over a year ago from in-house. Baltimore's is coming in a year. McCarthy and Harbaugh both have won one Super Bowl. Both have had trouble getting to the playoffs lately. Some could say personnel had a huge part in that. But nonetheless, you know, both did these one-year Band-Aid deals to get to this point. But now you're kind of looking at a crossroads. You know, Aaron Rodgers, I'll go back to my report in week 3 or week 4, that there is some tension there. Those, you know, the coach and the quarterback, it's not quite the bond it used to be. There's been some concern over scheme. There's been concern over the staff changes that were made last year and who was let go and who was brought, you know, who was brought in. And they're having difficulty getting to the level that they're accustomed to playing in terms of offensive football. And again, that GM switch a year ago really is pivotal. And where is the long-term marriage going to be? And are they looking at Mike McCarthy as a guy who we want to recommit to for 5 years and say, you're our guy for the rest of Aaron Rodgers' prime? You know, or do they just have, like, again, it kind of started with Andy Reid, one of these mutual parting of the way. You got 1 year left on your deal. We know you're going to make a lot of money, so we're not going to owe you anything. You're going to get a job right away, and we're going to go in a different direction.
We're talking to Jason Lockenfora for another moment or so. I cannot let you go because it seems like you and I cannot talk this season without talking about Le'Veon Bell. With the deadline being tomorrow, JLC, is this the last time we'll be talking about him for a while? What do you expect to happen, and what's that mean for his future?
Probably not, because if he comes back, which I don't believe is going to happen, but until that 4 o'clock deadline passes tomorrow, you never know with this cat. I mean, he's up there in Pittsburgh. You know what I mean? He might be sitting there eating a tuna fish sandwich, working out, you know, shooting some hoops, working on his skyhook at LA Fitness and decide, you know what, I'm going to play football. So I wouldn't entirely rule it out, but it's not likely. And so if he doesn't come back, then we're talking about in a week or two, well, what's the future hold? And what happens if they put the transition tag on him? And who would make the offer sheets and who wouldn't? When a player of this stature does something this unprecedented, Jim, I don't think it's going to evaporate just because he's not playing football. But I don't think he'll be back. Everything I've heard, and I've heard this for weeks, everybody's talking about the franchise tag and getting caught down in the weeds on that. They're going to transition him. And then we'll find out what the transition figure is. And then we'll find out if there's a team or teams that want to put together an offer sheet that would blow the Steelers away. Maybe it happens, but maybe it doesn't. There's a lot of time between now and late February, early March.
All right, so one last thought. Since the Giants are going tonight, as you wrote, a wise, long-suffering Giants fan floated an idea to you yesterday about the Giants trading for Jacoby Brissett in 2019 to address their quarterback situation. What do you make of that idea, and how do you see the Giants working that quarterback position next year and in the years to come?
Well, between us and now the rest of the world, you know that Giants fan as well. You probably run into him on Sunday mornings. His initials are TT. I like the idea. You know, I think for where they are, and if it turns out that the kid from Oregon and Tua they're in the 2020 class, and you want to look see at somebody for a year, and you're willing to trade a high two to do it, which let's face it, their two is going to be pretty high. Then I think Jacoby Brissett makes all the sense in the world. I don't want Blake Bortles. I'm not going the Flacco route. They need somebody with a little bit of youth, with a little bit of mobility, because the line still isn't what it's supposed to be. I mean, imagine, you know, Jacoby Brissett and Barkley and some RPO run action type situations. I like what I've seen of Jacoby. He's been trained by, you know, the likes of Josh McDaniels and Frank Reich. He's got starting experience. He's not going to come cheap, but it's going to be cheaper than Derek Carr. I really feel like he could be a really good bridge quarterback, you know, and his ability to boot and do some of the stuff that we saw Shermer do with Keenum in Minnesota a year ago, I think it could make sense. And remember, he got the seal of approval from none other than Bill Parcells coming out of college, and the tuna still carries a lot of weight in New York. So I think it could be interesting.
I think that would be interesting. Covering a ton of ground, Jason Lockenfora, an NFL insider for CBS Sports and CBSSports.com. Do not forget about his podcast. He's the co-host of the Be More Opinionated podcast, JLC. I will see you next weekend, Jason. Great to have you back. Thanks so much.
Look forward to it, buddy. Have a good one. Thank you.
My man, you're the best. JLC. He is such a pro. Covering a lot of ground, getting up early, taking care of business with us this morning. Thanks, JLC. See you next weekend. Appreciate you very much. 1-800-636-8686. John Harbaugh would not be available very long if he were to come free and clear. I think he will. Mike McCarthy looking like he might become free and clear. The question then to me is, everybody's looking for the next Sean McVay or Kyle Shanahan. The question to me is, I know people are looking for that, but are there really more guys like that? Are they that easy to find? Are there other guys like those guys? I'm not so sure. Also, the Saints were really impressive in beating down the Bengals. The Rams did what they had to do. I do admit, when I was on the NFL on CBS yesterday, one of the things I said about the Rams was, yes, they were beaten by the Saints, but it was only one game against a very good team on the road, and they were down 35-14, and they came back, and they were still the team to beat in the NFC. Then the Saints went out, and they did what they did yesterday, and they looked tough. Really tough. All right, all of that still ahead. Open phones too, 1-800-636-8686. Time now for a bottom of the hour sports update.
Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show on CBS Sports Radio.
Use the phone. Get up in here, 1-800-636-8686. Monday is an ATP day. Ask the pros. You get to ask me a question. And the segment's brought to you by O'Reilly Auto Parts. Go to CBSSportsRadio.com/AskThePros. Submit it right there. I will answer one of them later on. And remember, think O'Reilly Auto Parts for all of your car care needs. Get guaranteed low prices. Excellent customer service at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Better parts, better prices every day. Yo, flight deck. When Keith Arnold comes in studio, pop Batman. The flight deck is on the board. Alvin DeLauro is in Italy. Alvin DeLauro is celebrating his 10th wedding anniversary. He is in Italy. Alvin, little Alvy, was going to Rome. He was going to Venice. Alvin, can I repeat that? Alvin DeLauro is in freaking Italy. Alvin's like one of those crazy cats where he'll load the family up in the minivan and they'll drive to Northern California and back in the same weekend. I mean, it's like the biggest ask ever. And I don't remember him taking any really exotic vacations. That's just not the way Alvin rolls. He is in Italy, sans kids, because who could afford to bring, right? Flight deck. Look at the flight deck settling in. Who can afford to bring 14 kids to Italy? Not Alvy, not anybody. Alvy and Mill getting after it. Getting nice. So the flight deck, It's an incredible week, number one, for Alvin. He gets to be in Italy, which is great, once in a lifetime. And the second once in a lifetime opportunity, freaking the flight deck, is here every day this week. And not only here every day this week, but running the board, sitting in Alvin's seat. So as a reminder, flight deck, when Keith Arnold walks in, pop Batman. Dear Rome, we think Melo's time in Houston was a smashing success. Sincerely, Dez Bryant as a Saint. Mike Price, coach at Alabama. Bobby Kremins, coach at South Carolina. George O'Leary, coach at Notre Dame. And Eddie Munster, head coach of the Orlando Magic. If that song does not put a smile on your face, I don't know what will. You know, like when you have a favorite song, you try not to play it too much because if you keep playing it, you wreck it. You ever notice that? Like you have a favorite song and then you put it on your workout tape or you bump it in your car and you keep listening and you keep listening and then it starts to lose something. So then you play it even more and you start to chase it and then it goes away and then you lose what once was, this amazing song. And even if you don't listen to that same song for a year or two or 5 years, it's still wrecked when you drop the needle down again. That's the Munster theme for me. Oh, no, I listen to that song away from work. I don't only listen to that song when somebody mentions the Munster Kid as coach of the Orlando Magic or the Florida Gators or OKC. That song will never be the same for me, which is kind of sad and depressing. Yeah, that whole Melo in Houston thing's not working out real well, is it? Even if they keep saying that it is. It's obviously not. Just like it wasn't true when Melo said, oh, I embrace the role. If they want me to come off the bench, great. Sure it's not, Melo. Like, he was going to embrace that role. In the meantime, he's missed a couple of games now with a, quote, illness. Whatever that illness might be. I would imagine he's not playing that much. He doesn't like that very much. And as they get healthier, he will play even less. All right, let's talk about how you felt this morning when you woke up. As an example, I went to New York and back. Felt great. Felt great when I woke up. Truth. Now, how were you feeling when you rolled out of the rack this morning? I mean, it is Monday. If you had yourself a weekend, maybe you woke up feeling a little punch drunk, maybe a little sluggish. Ever have those mornings when you wake up and you don't know where the hell you are? You don't know what day it is. Was today one of those days? Does the alarm ever go off and do you not know where you are or what day it is? Maybe today. Or maybe you rolled out and you felt like a boss. Maybe you felt great. Maybe you went right to the kitchen and you smashed up 25 grams of protein. You know, up and at them, ready to kill the day, ready to kill the rest of the week. Or, if you're really fortunate, you woke up the way Baker Mayfield woke up yesterday, feeling the way he felt yesterday. Roll it.
And when I woke up this morning, I was feeling pretty dangerous.
Care to expand on that?
I just woke up feeling real dangerous.
Yeah. Quote, when I woke up this morning, I woke up feeling pretty dangerous. Now, to me, that sounds like a dude who had a good night of sleep. That sounds like a guy who slept on a Casper mattress. Maybe even slammed a Zipa up into his gap. And it's an even better quote when you know that he delivered that in a double-breasted overcoat on top of a hoodie. Look good, feel good. Feel good, play good. Feel dangerous, drop a dagger on somebody. Great look, better quote. But the best part is, he says it, and he just stands there, letting the moment sink in. He even throws in kind of a little eyebrow raise and a smile like, what? What? I'm not trying to get anybody to look at me. I'm not trying to be funny. I'm not looking to start anything at all. I'm just saying, I woke up, and I felt dangerous. And when asked to expand on that, he just repeated it. Right, because there's nothing to expand on. Quote, when I woke up this morning, I was feeling pretty dangerous. It seems to me that speaks for itself. It does not need any elaboration. So if Dion Lewis had not verbally assaulted the Patriots, that right there would have been your quote of the week. And Baker was right. He was dangerous. He completed the first 13 passes of the game. He went into halftime with a perfect passer rating and a couple of TD passes. And then he dropped this in the second half.
Higgins and Duvall go out wide left. Landry and Callaway near side of the right. Duke Johnson, the running back. Mayfield shotgun back to pass. Baker throws. Caught! It's Duke Johnson. He's going in. Touchdown! And the Browns are right back in it again as they go down the field and score after coming up with the turnover.
Baker, had a 151.2 passer rating for the game, the highest for a Browns quarterback since Brian Sipe. Are you kidding me about that? A Brian Sipe reset. Normally, when we're comparing current Browns quarterbacks to former Browns quarterbacks, we're comparing them to crappy Browns quarterbacks like Tim Couch or Brandon Whedon or Seneca Wallace or Spurgeon Wynn or Johnny Manziel. But you know, if Brian Sipe's name is coming out, something good happened. And it did. Something really good. In fact, in the last two games, Mayfield has completed nearly 75% of his passes for more than 500 yards, five touchdowns, and a pick. And he's only been sacked two times. All of the things the rookies are supposed to be struggling with, Mayfield suddenly does not seem to be struggling with at all. Earlier, but not the last 2 weeks. So if you're still having doubts about whether or not the Browns made the right choice in number one, you should stop having doubts as to whether or not they did. I know it's a small sample size. I know there are a lot of quarterbacks who started their careers on fire and then fell off really quickly. But the combination of Baker and this team, Baker and that city, man, it all feels good. It feels right. It feels unbelievable. It feels dangerous. But then again, he did wake up feeling dangerous. And the reason was because he was dangerous. He is. Better yet, let me think about this before I say it. Better yet, while he's dangerous, the Browns are dangerous. Yeah, I said it. The Browns are dangerous because it wasn't just Mayfield. It wasn't all Mayfield. That defense was nasty. They were getting after Matt Ryan, getting to Matt Ryan, forcing fumbles. In other words, they were doing what the 2018 Browns defense does, and the offense was feeling it. Old coordinator Freddie Kitchens even broke out the wishbone. And Nick Chubb broke out the backbreaker in the third quarter. Roll this.
Callaway near side of the right. Landry in motion left to right. Mayfield under center. Second down and 10. Takes the snap. Gives it. Chubb runs. He's to the 10. 15. He's to the 20. 25. 30. 35. 40. 45. 50. There goes Chubb. He's to the 30. 20. 10. 5. Touchdown. Shabalaba Hub. 92 yards.
Touchdown, Cleveland! Thanks to Browns Radio. Second longest run by a rookie in NFL history. You want dangerous. So when you look at Mayfield and Chubb and the weapons they have at wide receiver and the talent on defense, there is a lot to be hyped about. There's a lot of danger in that team. Yes, I know they're 3-6-1, but they sure don't look like 3-6-1. They sure don't feel like 3-6-1. And the truth is, they're the best 3-6-1 team in the history of the world. I mean, I've never seen or felt the buzz off a 3-6-1 team like I do this one. I tweeted it again yesterday when the Browns were trending number one in the U.S. on Twitter. The Cleveland Browns are America's team. Let me say it one more time for the people in the back. The Cleveland Browns are America's team. They wake up feeling dangerous. They go to bed knowing they're America's team. And C-Town has got to feel pretty damn good about that. I know this. I feel really good about it. So my question, Cleveland, how y'all feeling about yourselves? I feel great about you. How are you all feeling about yourselves right now? Especially coming off that game.
When I woke up this morning, I was feeling pretty dangerous.
Man, then he went out and he backed it up. It's one thing to say that and then do nothing. There you go, Flight Deck. How'd that feel? How you feeling about yourself, Flight Deck? Well done. This email starts, "Hi, Jim." Only one person starts emails like that to me. The "Hi, Jim!" exclamation point. Sarah T. "Hi, Jim. Alvy is getting recognized in Italy. Not because of you. Italians think he's Octomom. We're getting a day off from winning. War Mike Vrabel still being hot." Sarah T in Providence. "Hey, Sarah, we haven't heard from Thirsty Sarah in a long time. Haven't heard you thirsting after Mike Vrabel, Kurt Warner, Alvy, or anybody else for that matter. Dude, you did not just Octomom Alvy. Jack Del Rio. Thirsty Sarah is back. When we come back, we're still wide open. Joe Kelly, middle of next hour. your telephone calls. Also, one thing I want to reset. Hawk went to Pomona to check out Cruz. A reset of that coming up later on. Stay tuned.